Blog Talk Radio. Brain Injury Radio Network and our program Moving Forward on the third Sunday of each month. I'm your host, Kelly KJ Jones, brain injury survivor and now life coach. My co-host, Dr. Valentina, a bilingual clinical psychologist, is here to discuss the emotional aspects that coincide beyond our physical injuries. Moving Forward will host candid discussions with persons who have experienced neuroinflammation and certified clinicians who have assisted survivors. Their insight on discovery, the line between pain tolerance and pain threshold, as well as pathways to success, will provide hope and more options on how to build momentum for a sustainable recovery. So I'm looking for Dr. Valentina. Are you here tonight? Dr. Valentina?
Yes, I'm here. How are you, Coach KJ? How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I have a little secret to tell, though, before we even start the show.
What's
you know
that?
You know how you know you're just getting, like, a little bit older? I went to church today, and I fell asleep. I got to church, and when I got to church, I fell asleep in the car before going into the sermon. And then tonight, I fell asleep before the show. So if my voice sounds a little crackly, it's, I don't know. Let's just call it the weather. Let's not call it age. But how are you?
You sound great, huh? Actually. You sound
really?
Great. You sound like yourself. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Look, and don't tell people that I paid you to say that.
You did it.
So how are you? How's your week?
I am doing great. My week has been, the last week was good. Today marks the start of this week, and I expect that it'll be great. I mean, no complaints at all. Everything is going well, thanks to the Father.
Excellent. I love that positive energy.
How about with you, besides your mini nap, how is things going with you and your family?
Oh, look, it was more like a hiatus. It was like one of the bears going into hibernation. Can I just tell you something? I am so doggone blessed. This Thanksgiving, my mother is from a small town in North Carolina. And I was just like, you know, I called my cousins up. I was like, I really would love for my daughter to meet you. My daughter's 25 years old. I won't start crying. My daughter's 25 years old, and she's never met her family. So we are going to, nothing but God's grace, but we are going to Cherryville, North Carolina, and we are going to, I guess, as the young folks would say, turn up.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what they would say. That's exciting. Oh, I hope you all enjoy your family.
Yes, and we have a dancing family, so I'm quite sure there'll be at least one dancing video in there somewhere from Thanksgiving.
That is so wonderful and super healthy. People don't even realize dancing is a straight-up exercise, and, of course, exercise is a natural antidepressant. So, like, how fun, right? Like, to just be dancing, enjoying yourself, releasing all them feel-good hormone endorphins. Like, that's great.
I love it. I love it. That's going to make room for more food.
Are you ready
for
tonight?
Huh?
I am excited.
We have an amazing guest, Kim King. She's a news reporter. She's actually an Emmy and Edward R. Murrow award-winning reporter for WLOS in Asheville, North Carolina. Her passion is reporting on civil rights and civil justice. Kim is now sharing her story of a cancer misdiagnosis. In 2015, Kim saw an ophthalmologist. I'm so sorry. So I got to tell you, when we were talking about it, the first thing I did was I played the song Survivor because she's so impressive. In 2015, Kim saw an ophthalmologist about a recurring bump on her lower left eyelid. The doctor who examined her assured Kim the bump was harmless. She was even told that it was just makeup. You know, you need to remove your makeup better. Mm-hmm. And to do a better job, like I said, removing makeup. For years, Kim returned seeing multiple ophthalmologists, but each continued to reassure her that doctor's diagnosis was right. This summer, after 7 years, Kim learned that those diagnoses were wrong. She's here tonight to share her journey and educate everyone on the importance of a second opinion. Kim, are you with me?
Kelly, I'm with you, and you got everything right. I'm sorry to say everything you said is correct, and I have two friends that have been so kind that I know are going to join the conversation, and I thank you for having us.
I'm going to bring them in shortly, but I just wanted to ask you something, Kim. First of all, Kim, how are you tonight?
I'm good because you have great positive energy, and so does the doctor. And I think that in the midst of very serious stuff, it's really important to have levity. And so I love your laugh. I love the fact that we're looking forward to Thanksgiving. I think everybody on this podcast has family that love them. I know my two friends do, and that will be part of the conversation. And I think that's a really positive thing to remind everybody in the face of something serious like what I've been dealing with, which is, to be honest with you, has been tough for me. It's good to have close friends and have laughter.
Yes. Exactly. Laughter is medicine.
And, you know, the funniest thing is a lot of times friends don't realize the role that they play or how important the role is that they play in our lives. You know, one of the things that I try to do on the show, and I'm very grateful that you're able to do that we're able to do it tonight, is bring on friends because sometimes, you know, we have to give them their flowers because they may not realize the depth of what's going on. And so I am very grateful that you have your friends here tonight. One friend is from Connecticut. Am I correct? Hello? Hello? Did I lose you guys?
This is Susan. I'm not from Connecticut. I'm from North Carolina.
Okay. No,
right.
I'm sorry. I lost everybody for 2 seconds. I'm so sorry. One of your friends is from Connecticut. Am I correct? In the Connecticut area?
I'm from Connecticut.
Okay. So
I'm from Connecticut, but please tell me if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yes,
great.
I can hear you. Can you hear me too, Kelly, Coach KJ?
Yes.
Okay.
I can hear everyone.
Okay. You unmuted it. Okay.
So Carolyn Wall is a close friend of Kim. She's joining us tonight from Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut. A groundbreaking career woman, Carolyn climbed the professional ladder in publishing and broadcasting, serving as general manager for New York, the WNYW, Fox 5, for a record of 15 years. One of Carolyn's daughters is a longtime oncologist nurse. Carolyn has been by Kim's side since the beginning of her eyelid cancer journey. So we've got three people from the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area.
Wow. Yeah.
Kim?
Yeah, I'm here. So,
we're good people.
Kim, we're good people. That's right.
You know, one of the funniest things is growing up, my dad used to take me to FAO Schwartz for Christmas, right?
Oh.
And did you guys ever go?
Oh, absolutely. I took my children and my grandchildren.
Oh, my gosh. And then I saw the movie Big, and I was like, oh, my God, I was there. Literally, one of my claims to fame about being from New Jersey is that I used to go to FAO Shores for Christmas and where Big was taking place. So, Kellen, thank you so much for taking out time to be with us. And I'm going to actually bring in Susan Oler. She's from Asheville, North Carolina. She produced Oler. Susan Oler is a retired audiologist in Asheville and has closely followed Kim's story because Susan herself was misdiagnosed and has a story of her own. In 2018, after going to dermatologists for years, Susan learned that she had melanoma skin cancer and her right cheek requiring extensive surgery. Susan also got the right diagnosis by Kim's new eye doctor. So, you know, this eye doctor's phone should be ringing off tomorrow. Susan is sharing her story to raise awareness that patients must push and get second opinions from a really good doctor who's an excellent diagnostician. So, Susan, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent, excellent. So I wanted to, first of all, just start off with Kim. Kim, tell us a little bit about your story. So you, you know, eyelid cancer, like I've never heard of eyelid cancer before you. I mean, we hear skin cancer.
You know, that's a really good point. That's a good point. And a lot of people have brought that up to me, Kelly. They don't, how can people get this? I got news for everybody. It's your skin. And it just happens to be in an obscure place. When I went into the dermatologist originally who referred me to the ophthalmology practice, I didn't even know about this. I just knew I had a bump on my lower lid. When I went to the ophthalmologist, again, I really didn't know, and they didn't bring it up. They just, you know, the original doctor just said it's something called blepharitis, eye irritation. That's what his diagnosis was. He said, I have something called a chalazia, which is a glorified name for a sty, which is diagnosed as a clogged oil gland. To describe the bump that was on my lower lid, I'll tell you it was subtle. It felt more like an irritation. There was no pain. It was on, like you mentioned, my left lower lid. It would come and go. But when I look at my records, which I've looked at, to be honest with you, a lot, and every time I look at them, I see something new. It said when I came in 2015 that I had reported to them that it had been on and off for years. So, you know, that is yet another little nuance that is unnerving that this had been going on prior to. And I just got to the point in 2015 where I said, this is really bothering me. So I had gone to them. Their remedy, the doctor's remedy, told me that it was nothing to worry about, clogged oil glands, it comes with age. And I will tell you now, just to cut to the chase, that in my reading as a journalist, because this is my profession, I have read that this is unfortunately something that is misdiagnosed. And because whether you want to call it its subtlety or not, but the only flip side to that is I would say that these are ophthalmologists, and as doctors, I feel they have a responsibility to know that these things are misdiagnosed, that these things are overlooked. Mm-hmm. And I would even bring up Susan because and then I'll go on with my story just quickly, and I kept going back to these doctors, this practice. In 2017, I went in for an emergency. I had like a bleeding on the white of my eye right above the area.
Oh, yeah.
And I was once again told, don't worry about it. This was on the white of my eye. It's called the sclera. And I was told that was ultraviolet damage.
Hello?
Looking back now, knowing that this is caused by UV from the damage from sun rays being outdoors, to me, that was another red flag. The other red flag,
hold on,
everybody. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Coach.
Are you there?
Uh-oh. Coach KJ?
We lost her.
Uh-oh, it's Dr. Valentina. I don't know if
I'll just go on while we're waiting for Kelly to come back.
Yes.
What I'll say is, in subsequent years, I had eyelash loss. That's another major red flag for anyone listening to this. Just in general, when you have eyelid cancer, it can be a bump. It can be a freckle, which is what Susan had. And Susan, are you on the phone? Can you hear me?
Yeah,
maybe just while we're waiting for Kelly to come back, you can tell a little bit about what happened to you.
Okay, well, I have been going to a dermatologist yearly since, like, the 1990s because I've had a lot of exposure on my face and my hands. I used to do whitewater kayaking, so you not only get the sun reflection from the water. But anyway, I went to one dermatologist. It was actually a PA. For four years, I went five times in 4 years, and I was told when I brought it up, like, these look like freckles are getting bigger and darker, and they're kind of spreading around. They go, oh, it's just an age spot.
Mm-hmm.
And they never did a melanoma. And it just so happens, I was seeing Dr. Choi for something else, and she looked at my right cheek. It was just like quarter inch to a half inch below my eyelid was where it started. She said, that looks like melanoma. And I said, well, I just saw the dermatologist 2 weeks ago, and they said it was just age spot. But I just had a feeling that the dermatologist I was seeing wasn't very good. So I had already set up for the new dermatologist I was going to go see. And she literally just walked in the room, looked at me, and said, that's melanoma on your face. So the only question at that point was, how far had it spread? And I've had it on there for years. So turned out it spread quite a bit down my cheek, but I had the kind of melanoma that generally does not go to your lymph nodes or to other organs, which is not true for a lot of melanoma. And if I had the other kind, the kind that really metastasizes easily, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be talking.
Wow.
And, the other thing, too, with skin cancers, people think it's not skin cancer. I heard somebody make a comment. It's kind of a flippant comment. Oh, skin cancer is not a real serious cancer. That's very untrue. And, Carolyn's daughter has been a longtime oncology nurse. I mean, cancer is cancer, and mine is basal cancer, but obviously the tumor has been growing for years because I had to have extensive surgery that I'm still recovering from. My eye is stitched shut. They had to do multiple skin grafts, and I took myself to the best place that I could where I have support. I'm down in Miami, and I went to a place called Baskin Palmer. But skin cancer is very serious, and I think all of us, including my friend Carolyn, who's been by my side with this, would urge people to advocate for themselves and realize that doctors, when they give you a diagnosis, it's not always right. And if something is persisting and recurring, you have to take it into your own hands. And I had trusted these doctors and believed each time I went in that they were right and that nothing was wrong because it was subtle. And then this summer, it got to the point where it was red and inflamed. And sadly, I have to tell you that, again, I was told it was not cancer and not to worry about it. And I ended up saying, I want to get this cut off. And then it was Dr. Christina Choi, who Susan went to in the Asheville area, who took one look at me. And she says, you need a biopsy. And here we are.
Wow.
Not all physicians are good diagnosticians. I've learned that over the years. And you really have to find, if you have a suspicion, you need to change doctors at that moment for that particular reason and find one who is a good diagnostician because the other thing is I was told more than once that if something comes and goes, it's not cancer. I was told that. I don't have cancer, thank God, but I was told that, if something comes and goes, you really don't need to worry about it. Well, here we have two examples of things that did come and go, and they were malignant.
Wow.
You know, outrageous. I wonder, when I think about it, really, it's outrageous.
Tim, I wonder, because you were going to what was the best of the best, where did you get the numption, or where did you get the idea to go beyond that, or do something different? Because a lot of times, look, there are many people who go for a second opinion. You went beyond the second opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, Kelly, let me correct you on that. I didn't. I mean, I did. I kept going back, but see, Asheville's not a big town, so this is where I was referred, and I was, you know, trusted that I was in good hands, and the fact that I kept going back and was constantly reassured that this was nothing. I was told to put hot compresses, and even in my records, you know, looking back again, it's hindsight. It's sad. I reported to them it wasn't working, and this is the key thing that I think all of us would agree with. Biopsy, ask for a biopsy, ask for a biopsy. I didn't know that. I did not know that. So, Kelly, I can't tell you that I advocated. I kept going back is what I did, and then I kept believing that they were telling me that the diagnosis was right because I didn't have pain. It was subtle, but now I know eyelash loss, which I had in 2019. I started in 2015. I went back in 2017. I had an emergency. It's even on my records. And nobody said, okay, let's do a biopsy because it was on one eye. That's another red flag. If you have symptoms that are asymptomatic on one eye, one eyelid, that's another red flag. And to be aggressive. So these are all sad lessons that I have learned after the fact. So this, you know, what do they say? Carolyn knows this, you know, burn me once or shame on you, and then it happens again. We have to take our health care into our own hands. Show respect to the doctors, yes, but, I mean, I just, this will not leave me. This is part of my life now that this happened to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the tenacity. I love your tenacity. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Susan speaking. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I always thought that, you know, cancer was either a sore that bled or it was like a mole that got weird. In my case, it was perfectly flat. It didn't itch. It didn't bother me. It didn't bleed. It just looked like they were getting darker and irregular and it's kind of spreading out. But the cancer spread even beyond that. Since we're a talk show here, I would recommend people go online and look at pictures of melanoma and basal cell skin cancer, just to see what it does look like, so you know to be suspicious if it shows up on you.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another point. I mean, like my friend Carolyn, she is Italian descent, so people that are fair skin, light eyed, have a much higher risk for skin cancers, but does not rule out that people of color, that people with darker skin can't get cancers, skin cancers. It's exposure to the sun. They will also tell you tanning beds. But dermatologists that obviously make their living diagnosing skin cancers will tell you, put a hat on. A friend that I met through this journey told me that her eye cancer doctor, her eyelid cancer doctor, told her a lot of truckers get eyelid cancer. Think about it. The sun is coming through the side of the, and then also your sunglasses don't protect the entire perimeter. So while this is obscure, this does happen. Eyelid cancer.
Wow.
You really need goggles.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to look into it. I'll
swimming goggles that frame that outline your eye cavity, rather than sunglasses. If you think about it, really, if you're susceptible, if you're very fair skinned.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what people should wear.
Kim, a lot of women, not a lot, but some women are more, more receptive or more leaning to a response from a male physician. You know, the man said it, or you know, it came from an expert doctor, etc. What gave you the gumption? I go back again. What gave you the gumption to go beyond? And I'm kind of leaning towards some of the stuff that you told me about how your mom is your hero.
Well, I this summer when the bump wasn't going away, It was on my eye. It was inflamed. And I frankly talked to a good friend of mine, and I said, I think this is cancer. It was the first time I ever said that about this situation. And my friend tried to talk me down. Don't worry. Go back to the ophthalmologist. I went back, and this summer I was again told, don't worry, it's nothing. And then I said to that doctor, well, I'm sick of this. I want it cut off. So that's why I say to you, it wasn't gumption. I just was sick of it. Now, other doctors, because I have friends who have had these things cut off, get a biopsy. If you have something irregular, you have to sometimes ask for that. And I know that Susan is more experienced with skin cancers, and she has gone in and regularly asked, right, Susan?
No, in the past I never used to ask for a biopsy, but the doctor I have now, if I said this looks funny to me, she'll immediately biopsy it, just to make sure. She's really big on biopsy, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, what I would say about my mother now is she's passed away, but she was a very strong person. And, I had posted on my Facebook page for work. My managers at my TV station have been so supportive. It's been humbling. And I want to educate people. And my story is a small story compared to many, many other stories out there. And I think it's important for women, for men to speak out if they have a story to tell. And I asked people on my page to share their accounts, to share their photos, because other than just a passing story, my hope is that people will really take away thinking about their own health care and thinking not to be intimidated by doctors and not always to believe that it could be wrong, and that, to push and to question. And the gumption now for me is to, of course, advocate for myself going forward. I cannot unring this bell. And does it bother me that this has possibly been growing in my lower lid for possibly more than 7 years? Of course. I'm not going to lie about that. These tumors, the basal cells, they don't grow over weeks. They grow over months and years. And so to know that I started going in 2017 with very serious signs of a tumor growing, developing by 2017, 2019, the symptoms, eyelash loss, thinning of my eyelid, that's yet another red flag. I was continued to be told it's nothing. I didn't know these things until I went to Dr. Choi, who Susan knows and is very well regarded. And I credit her, because she took one look at me this summer and said, you need a biopsy. I was floored, because within a month prior, I had been told, don't worry, it's, quote, it's not cancer. And it was. It is. It was.
Yeah.
Did your mother's cancer make you fear that possible diagnosis? Did it influence it?
I didn't think about it at the time. My mom had breast cancer. She was diagnosed. We were from New York. She was in New York City at the time. She had a lump that was produced, she believes, from estrogen back in the 70s and 60s. Women were given estrogen as a supplement, and she took it for many years. And her doctor had given her some extra. It was also pushed as an antidepressant to keep your skin young for women, and she took it. And she had a lump pop in her breast, and she had cancer, and she had a lumpectomy. And then, sadly, 10 years later, she developed pain in her lower back, and it had metastasized to her bones. So when I didn't think about my mom at that time, when I was going in with this bump, because I didn't know that it was kind of cancer or a sign of cancer. But she's been with me since I was diagnosed. And my friend Carolyn, who I've known from WNYW, because I worked as an assistant to the assistant at Fox 5 when I first got out of college in the late 80s, early 90s, she knew my mom. And and Carolyn's a force of nature. So, she has been very, very supportive, and she's a very strong person. And Carolyn, I want you to pipe in here.
No, you're doing fine.
Such a friend. Such a friend.
Well, I think the story deserves to be told. There are so many stories like the two on the phone tonight. And the more we verbalize experiences that are real, that we have witnessed,
yeah,
there'll be people saved. Because it's really, I considered Kim's story an outrage. And,
mm-hmm,
particularly because of the period of time that transpired. And I told her she should write a book, but and get other stories as witness to what can happen. And the other thing is your instinct. Kim, you had an instinct, and
mm-hmm,
we should never ignore our instincts, ever.
Yes.
Because they are all right, I would venture to say, in my case, 100% of the time.
Well, mm-hmm, the thing I would say about that to all of you, to the doctor and to Kelly and to Susan, I look back, was it I just had an irritation. I didn't,
mm-hmm,
have this feeling that, oh, my God, what is this? Because it was subtle. And that's where the rub is for me, is we go to doctors,
mm-hmm,
for their expertise. I've gone to the ophthalmologist to say, okay, and they said, yeah, okay, it's nothing. And I can tell you, because I've seen them, this is a commonly misdiagnosed, and that doesn't excuse it. To me,
right,
it makes it even more serious that the doctor, mm-hmm, should say, hey, I know this gets misdiagnosed. In fact, I looked at a study that was done by McGill University, and a very respected doctor, an ophthalmologist up there, Dr. Coderre, who I communicated with, and his,
mm-hmm,
result was when chalazia, these dyes, are biopsied, when they are removed, because people will ask them and doctors will remove them, they should be biopsied. Because when you don't biopsy, what you don't know, you don't know. And again, this goes back to you as the patient, as sad as that might be, you've got to take charge. And that is my takeaway. That's my mother.
Yep.
That's Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
That's Susan. That's all of us talking about this. You, listening to us now, have got to take charge. And while you go to the doctor, you hope for expertise, but it is the diagnostician. It is the one that's going to go the extra mile. And
yeah,
I feel that those doctors did not go the extra mile for me because they had the records right in front of them that it was,
mm-hmm,
asymptomatic and I was recurring, and nobody said, okay, it is time for a biopsy. 2 years,
yeah,
in, 3 years in, and now I'm 7 years my original visit.
Oh.
Wow.
What were you feeling when you heard cancer? What were your thoughts?
It's the thing that anybody feels. And, I was in shock because a month,
mm-hmm,
prior I was told I didn't have it. And then when she came back, Dr. Choi, who is wonderful and very serious doctor, she's an oculoplastic surgeon in Asheville, I said to her when she told me, yes, I'm worried, I said, well, how bad could this be? And she pushed back on me. She says, Kim, I'm not going there. And so I wait, I had to wait, and the biopsy comes back, and then I hear it's basal. And I'm like, phew, that's, I know basal, a lot of people know about basal cell cancer. It's the, if you want any kind of skin cancer, it's the one you want because it's the least,
right,
invasive, et cetera. Then I go back to the appointment. I brought my a good friend of mine with me because I wanted a second set of ears. That's another thing, everybody, second,
yes,
set of ears in that appointment. And she began to tell me, yes, you have basal, but you're going to need a flap. You're going to need skin grafts. And I started to have a meltdown. I said, are you kidding me? And,
right,
and of course, I work in television, and I have to be on camera. And I just was apoplectic. Again,
mm-hmm,
I want to say my case is nothing compared to some people. I have a good friend from college that reached out to me after I went public on my Facebook page. And she shared her account. She had melanoma. She had a freckle on her top of her nose. And she said doctors in New York City even didn't think anything of it. She ended up at MD Anderson, which if anybody's not heard of that is a top,
yes,
cancer hospital in Houston, Texas. And they had a contact down there with a dermatologic expert. And this woman kept looking at this freckle. She did one biopsy. That biopsy came back negative. She did another biopsy.
That's how tenacious that doctor was. And guess what? It was melanoma. My friend had major, major skin grafts. Puts my story, what I'm going through, nothing. I couldn't believe what she had been through. So, again, light skin, but it can be anyone that can get skin cancer. So you must, just like Ellen said, yes, trust your instincts and don't be intimidated by doctors. It is your life and your health.
That's right. I have to say, too, I just got to chime in that it is. First of all, ignorance is not bliss, and reliance on the medical system to tell you what's what when you just know, like, this isn't right, or I don't like the way this looks, whatever it is, I'm not satisfied with how you're sort of dismissing my concern, or, you know, sort of seemingly pacifying me. You know, and so you get that second, third, fourth, which really does take tenacity. I also have a reaction, like, it's so interesting that for some populations it seems like there's overdiagnosis and misdiagnosis, and for others it's like almost like, oh, fine, nothing's wrong with you. You know, it's like opposite ends of the spectrum in many cases. So it's just like, man, but I'm glad, like Kelly said, that, you know, you just kept going. You all just kept going. Regardless of your motive, you kept going, and that's sort of what helped you.
Well, the only thing I would say is I kept going, but I kept going to doctors that didn't diagnose me. So that's my lesson also, to realize it was a very large practice, and many, and I didn't think at the time, I didn't know that I should get out of that practice. And that Dr. Choi was at a different practice. I just thought I would go, you know, I saw multiple ophthalmologists and ocular doctors at that practice. But looking back, I see that the one doctor gave the initial and then the diagnosis never changed.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely real. It's almost like docs, just like you all was like, oh, we don't want to insult the doctors. It's like culturally we've been taught to, like, trust them like they're mini gods or something, you know, and don't question them. And they're the experts, when really the stuff sometimes that you look up online is the same thing you get from them. It's like really strange, but it's something, because they also do that amongst each other, right? They don't want to disrespect one another or, you know, it's almost like a doc would have to acknowledge their incompetence in an area in order to refer you to another doc, or else they stick with their diagnosis, and then their colleagues who see you thereafter sort of stick with it because it's this brotherhood, this sort of gang or something, you know. You know, and so it's really interesting. Like, it makes sense that in the end, to keep the peace amongst themselves, they would sacrifice their client, their patient. That was real for you.
It's sad, but probably true. I was wondering, Carolyn, you are in Connecticut. Please forgive me. Kim is in North Carolina. How were you able to assist her during this process? Because some people may have friends or family that's far away. How can you still assist?
Well, we talked a lot. And by phone, and then she came up and stayed with me. And I offered to go to Miami with her when she had her surgery, but fortunately Kim has a lot of good friends, and someone in Miami was had already offered to be with her. So, you know, I mean, it was it seemed like a natural thing, and didn't necessarily have to be living in the same place.
But it's more than that. She's not saying enough, Carolyn. She has been a tremendous support system, because she is a very strong woman. So come on now, Carolyn. You have been such a force for me, really.
How important was it for you to go to New York and get away, or go to Connecticut and get away from North Carolina after the diagnosis?
Well, I had just gotten diagnosed, and so Carolyn saw me right after, and I was very emotional, and I've been happy for her to talk about that, because I was in a bit of a surreal state of mind. I had been diagnosed maybe 2 days before I was up to New York, and I had some personal business to do up there, and I stayed with Carolyn, and yes, I was emotional, and I had my medical records, but I mean, I would be curious to hear what you had to say about that, Carolyn, when I was up there.
Well, I didn't really, I mean, I assumed that you wouldn't, it wasn't business as usual, you know, and you have a diagnosis or you have anything that transpires a couple of days before a visit, you're going to be different than if nothing had happened. So I didn't have any expectations that it would be any different than it was, but I didn't think you were overly emotional by any means. I think you were quieter and a little preoccupied and clearly worried. But other than that, you know, it wasn't dramatic. It was as one would expect, I think.
And then the other thing I would say too, Kelly and Doctor, is that Carolyn has this daughter who she would talk to on my behalf. And I think, you know, having your daughter be a nurse like that, Carolyn, has given you a lot of insight.
Well, yeah, I mean, Christina was an oncology nurse at Memorial Sloan Kettering before she was married, and has maintained her license and, like most nurses, has a calling. And even though she isn't, although she could now because my grandchildren are so old, but she really has retained a lot of what she learned there and what she observed, and so she has a good instinct. So I was going to get, if Kim hadn't found this excellent surgeon in Miami, I was going to ask Christina for, and she was already looking for a recommendation through Memorial. And but as it turns out, Kim didn't need it. She found what appears to be a fabulous physician. So
mm-hmm.
all's well that ends
well. Susan, you were there daily, or you were right next door in North Carolina, Asheville. What were you seeing from the before the diagnosis, during the diagnosis? I mean, what stood out, or, you know, what were you seeing?
Well, one thing is I was working then. I went to a doctor that several members of the staff have been using. And so when I said Dr. Miracle thinks I have melanoma, they instantly believed it was melanoma because they knew her and they knew how good she was, which was the reason why I went to see her, because I just thought the other doctor, it was just my intuition was saying, I don't think she's doing a very good job. Although I have to say, when the Dr. Miracle told me I had melanoma, I was really shocked because, you know, that was why I had been to a dermatologist every year for like the last 25 years. And had been to one twice the year before. So I just didn't expect that's what it was, you know. But I have other skin issues too, and some of it is sun damage that, you know, I know needs to be taken care of. It's like, you know, they tell you do this or do that because it's good health practice, like get your mammograms every year or every other year and things like that. Get pap smears done. If you don't follow through on stuff like that, and follow your intuition on who to go see, then you can end up in a world of hurt.
And
well,
you know, the thing
that
is, Callie, too. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we're fortunate that we have so many good diagnostic tools now that weren't available as short a time as 10 years ago. And, you know, with... I mean, there's almost no reason to die from colon cancer now if you're unlucky enough to get it early before you start having colonoscopies. But you know, otherwise, if you're faithful to those examinations, it's an amazing diagnostic tool. But you know, now I had my daughter's great aunt had melanoma at the hairline in the back of her head. She couldn't see it. Nobody could see it. She had long hair, and she died.
Yeah. Oh, my
nobody
goodness.
Nobody had skin checks in those days. So, you know, nobody went to a dermatologist for their, you know, body scan every year. And, you know, it was really a very creepy, terrible story. But, you know, fortunately, we're smarter now.
Yeah.
And that, you know, with that melanoma too, you know, because like what Susan said, you do need to see what it looks like. And, you know, somebody did say to me, check your scalp. I mean, again, eyelid cancer's obscure. I would think probably same thing on your scalp. But I don't, Susan, maybe, what was it? You told, I know you said it was a very small freckle, right?
No, well, it started out as just some freckles and dark spots, which I have a lot of on my hands and my face because of so much sun exposure. But it was getting darker and bigger and spreading out, you know, and but I was told it was just an age spot. It's not. It was not an age spot at all.
When you, Tim, when you found out and you went to, and you and Susan started talking, how did the conversation start? Like, what are some of the things, or Carolyn, or whomever, how did the conversation start?
Well, I think that the conversation's just been organic, really, you know, after my diagnosis.
In my case, I was following Kim on Facebook because she is, you know, a known public figure in the area. And I've already communicated with her before, but I think we started, I think today was the first time we talked on the phone, but we've been back and forth with email and messaging on Facebook and things like that because I'm following her work mostly. But when she said she had that, she saw Dr. Choi, I said, Dr. Choi's the best, you know, she'll take good care of you.
Yeah.
I think of
It also requires diligence and self. We have a job to play as well. Can't just leave it up to a doctor every, you know, in every case. And I think that the generation or two before us did that, but we're smarter. And I remember a story Christina telling me about, you know, a fatal melanoma between toes on somebody's feet. And we're, no sun. No sun. And you know, so those body checks, yes, they should separate your hair and they like make parts with their fingers and they should check every square inch of your scalp. And if they don't, you'll just ask them to please do that because it can occur anywhere.
Yeah. Nobody's ever checked my scalp. I've never had that in a check of a scalp.
Well, this woman that I go to is obsessive, and she even separates your butt cheeks.
Whoa.
But hopefully a gynecologist, and I've started, you know, years ago, I started referencing that to my gynecologist to take an extra minute when I was having a pap smear to, you know, to notice if there was any, if there were any growths or discoloration. Because that's not what they were trained to look for, right?
Right.
But they are, I think they are now, and the same with dentists. Dentists have gotten much smarter and much more attentive, at least my dentist has, to what they see when they check your mouth. They're not just looking at your teeth and your gums, you know, they're looking at the lining of your cheeks and everything under your tongue and whatever.
So, yeah. As a behavioral health, you know, doc, so psychologist, you know, I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I got two reactions. One is, you know, we don't, I want to make sure that the listeners know that this is educational, that it is to, you know, like make them more active members of their health as opposed to these passive members who, you know, sort of rely on systems and then like end up, you know, like dying, you know. But other end, I'm also like thinking, you know, we're not trying to, of course, it's all about just awareness and education. We want them to know that we're not trying to scare them. It's just, right, because I'm sure there's some people, as y'all was talking, I was even thinking about myself, like, oh man, okay, like a bump on the eyelid, like, you know, hair, like eyelash loss. And so we don't necessarily want people to like, also assume it's more like, okay, ask the questions when you're hearing that this is what a symptom could possibly be of this issue, like ask questions, you know, like maybe, but it's so tough because, you know, I get just in my office clients who they have just a regular stomach ache from something that, from overeating and they just automatically go online. And of course you can find a symptom to everything that you're going through, you know? And so it's just so hard, like to find a balance. I think in the end, you know, if you're already somewhat anxious and easily stressed. Yeah. And so I think in the end, the whole point of this is to just make listeners active parts, you know, play an active role, or active participants, you know, in their health so that they know at least the questions to ask. And if they are bothered, if they are, you know, it's aggravating, the whole thing about it leaves and it comes back, you know, that these, like, don't just look at the symptom, look at, like, some patterns, you know?
Right.
Look things up, of course, like, ask questions. And so I'm glad in the end we're talking about this, but I have to just kind of get that in there.
I agree with you. And then, you know, we're all women, and I think we all know there are studies that say women are much more attentive to their health care, and they'll but we all have men in our lives and friends or husbands or sister, brothers, sons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there's a message, too, that we need to send to men, because I will say on my Facebook page, 90% of the people posting are women. How do we get the men who we know are reluctant to go to doctors also to be like this, too?
Yeah, that's a great point. You almost need male leaders or representatives, like people who also went through some stuff and are willing to, you know, it's almost like if whether it's family members, doctors, whomever it is interacting with these men that's going through stuff, need to somehow motivate them, you know, incentivize them to kind of make a post or be willing to, you know, participate in the post that's made on their behalf. Because without them, their representation, I think the fear, the shame, you know what I mean, will exist. Like, it'll just continue to flourish.
A lot of people just don't even want to go to the doctor. I've heard that from just some male friends. I don't want to go. I don't like, you know, you got to take charge. Just that's our message. You got to take charge of your own health.
Yes. Oh, and that. Thank you for saying that, because that was the sort of other thing that I was thinking is part of why I'm assuming guys don't want to go is because kind of like at least in the Black community, what I was taught about not going is they always find something. And in our cases, you know, they'd be experimenting on us. They'd be, you know, when you think about John Hopkins and syphilis. And so I think that, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's just sometimes it's so hard to, like, go because that sparked my other thought, right, a memory to my other thought, which was often it's so hard, right? Like, in you all's case, you're like, we should, you know, if you have an issue and you're not satisfied with this sort of dismissive, you know, report, explanation about what you're going through, go back. And I think that that's real. Like, definitely do that. It's just I'm trying to reconcile that with also, you know, the, like, some, you know, there's all type of studies out there that talk about, oh, you get these, like, pre-mammogram, I forget the wording, but it has to do with the mammogram, and basically it's preventative care, except the studies are saying that they end up basically giving you breast cancer. And so it's just so tough, you know, because on one end you go and you really, everything's fine and benign and there's no issue and, you know what I mean? It's like they create an issue, and now you have a cancer when you wouldn't have otherwise had anything. And then you got this other piece where it's like, you know, you have an issue, seek help. And so I think the difference is one person's an active participant in the end, just reiterating that in their care, realizing something is not right, whether it's cosmetic seemingly right. It's like, I don't like the way this looks. Come to find out there's something to this thing, you know, versus this inactive participant that's just sort of going with the culture, the system, the way that things are done, you know, to stay healthy and then boom, you get something. So I guess that's the moral of the story. Just advocate for your needs, you know, and don't necessarily do anything extra if, you know, if you don't feel led to.
I was just going to say, as people are going through the process of discovery, one of the things that I highlight all the time is making sure that you have a support system in place. I look at, you know, you just mentioned Finn, and I was thinking about Chadwick Boseman and how he actually had cancer and managed it in silence with a very close network. And whether it's a close network, a public network, whatever it may be, some people have the ability to ask for support and the ability to be transparent with a larger audience. Whatever your flavor is and whatever works best for you, move forward. that's why I was asking in the beginning, how did the conversation go with the two of you, or the introduction to, you know what, I've just been diagnosed and I need support. Give listeners maybe some of the tools that they can use if they are silently needing support.
I think what I would say is you want friends that know you, that, you know, whatever your emotions are, if you get diagnosed, that are willing to listen and also give you feedback. You know, Carolyn knows me, and then Susan and I are getting to know each other. These are strong women. I'm lucky to have them in my life. And I think you're right. It's an individual choice. People want to stay private. I can't blame them at all. That is your right, what you choose to discuss. But if you're fortunate enough to have just not to just, you've got to lean on somebody emotionally, I think.
Yeah. And that's what I was asking, like, what did the difference make? Like, once you, was it that exhale moment? You walked into Carolyn's house, and it was just like, you know, you, at that time your mother was not alive. Am I correct?
That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So your hero, you know, your superhero, the one who instilled a lot of values in you, was no longer there. But you still was, you were still able to find someone. And
you're
so
right.
That's what was that moment like, or what was that opportunity like to actually just exhale? Whether you cry,
I know Carolyn cares about me. I know she cares about me. I trust her implicitly. I think she gives excellent advice, and I think that you want to go with people that you, your friends or family that you trust, that you respect, and I have tremendous respect. And Carolyn is a person that's a stand-up person. When she says she's doing something, she's going to do it. And that's another thing that this diagnosis, you kind of separates the wheat from the chaff as far as friendships or whomever, because this is a serious thing for anyone to go through. And mine, like so many people, have so much worse. And Carolyn is somebody, if she's going to say she's calling, she's calling. She's beating that phone down. I'm lucky to have that. Not everybody has that, but it's a tremendous source of comfort.
And then what did Susan do when she responded, when you started to connect?
I don't know how Susan feels about it. I'll let you talk, Susan.
Okay. I had a lot of support from my coworkers right from the get-go. I mean, I literally came into the office and said, this is what they told me. And they were very, very supportive. So I felt like I had plenty of support in I have a lot of support from my friends, from people in my church and people in the community. My family lives out of town, but they certainly were concerned too. So I also feel like when you need help, a lot of times somebody will come into your life and will help you out. You know, I guess it's not always true, but it does seem like to me in my life, when I needed help or I needed support, it just materialized for me. At least
you also had to let them know that you needed help. So help can be there, but if you don't reach out and say something, then you might miss that opportunity for somebody to help you. And then the other thing I was going to say is, look, the person you might go to, you know, the person who's your closest friend may not be able to handle it, and it might be okay to go to a second or third person because the initial person isn't able to handle it.
Yeah, I should add, I did get a couple of strange responses, one from a sister of mine and another from another friend, good friend, who had cancer. And, you know, when I told her by text I have cancer, she says, no, you don't. I'm like, no, that's not the person.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I just wanted to add one more thing. And, you know, people of color often get misdiagnosed for melanoma. Because it's a little harder to detect because you know, you don't have the skin color variation as much, or it doesn't show up as easily. I guess it's more likely. And you can also get melanoma in your eye. So that's really pretty scary too. So you know, and you're not going to know it's there, you know. because it's a color differential. But anyway, I think the best thing to do with doctors, or at least from now on, I would, every time, if I was with a dermatologist and I have suspicion, I would ask them to biopsy if they didn't go ahead and do it automatically. Just to
I
make
agree
sure.
With that.
I grew up in Parsippany, New Jersey. I say this all the time. But I'm from East Orange. And so in East Orange, it's kind of like, you know, if you have something going on, it's kind of like, you know, tough it up, you know, put on your big girl panties, keep it moving, et cetera. I hope saying the word panties didn't offend anybody, but, you know, you got to keep it going. When I moved to Parsippany, I'm telling you, if my friends had a fingernail that hurt, their parents were taking them to the doctors to get checked. And you guys know my story that with my cerebral aneurysm, originally I was told that I just had poor vision. Then I was told that it was allergies. And after 6 weeks, I wound up going to another physician, and they told me that my aneurysm could burst at any moment. And that was, you know, the 50% fatality rate of aneurysms that rupture, and it's even higher amongst African Americans. But the reason why I kept going back and forth, and, you know, I wish you were here so I can give her flowers, is my best friend growing up, Jerry Goodman. I mean, Jerry would make me go check on everything. And her mother, Marilyn Goodman, and Rona Makish, they would make me check up on everything. And because of that, you know, I went from hearing that I had poor vision to and getting glasses and, you know, taking more allergy medicine to realizing that I had a cerebral aneurysm. So thank you guys for being advocates on really pushing getting the additional diagnosis. If people are trying to move forward or as people are moving forward, what are some of the suggestions that you would like to provide our listeners if there's something that we've missed, and I'm going to ask if Tim could start. I'm going to ask if we could do Susan and Carolyn, Tim, Dr. Valentina, and then we're going to close out because our show is now, we're doing our show for an hour. An hour instead of 2 hours. So I wanted to make sure that we close with that. So Susan or Carolyn, would you like to start first?
Follow up. Just keep following up until you're satisfied. That's my advice. Yeah. This is Susan.
Okay.
Susan.
Mine is don't let fear make your decisions for you.
Yes.
And mine would be ask for biopsies on something that is concerning you.
Dr. Valentina?
Does that leave me? Okay. I would say basically follow your instinct, which is basically spirit, but some people might say energy. Because in the end, if you follow your first mind, it won't lead you astray.
And do you find right now, especially since COVID, that people are more intuitive, or do you think people are, you know, more secretive?
I say definitely scarier. You know, like definitely more. I don't know. Actually, you have this split. Like it seems like difficult situations like that will kind of really show you, you know, the person's, I don't know if you want to say character or disposition, but, you know, I noticed that there's definitely more people who was moved, you know, by the all of the fear, all of the you know, the media coverage, the, you know, I don't know, agenda, if you will. And so it's something because you got so many people right now who actually are seeking mental health care because they don't like the impact that words had on their psyche, you know. The fact that they was moved so, like they, you know, people didn't like see loved ones because of this thing. People, of the fear associated with this thing. People didn't sit on their porch to get natural sunlight, which is, you know, going to facilitate or promote vitamin D in you, which is known to fight viruses and improve mood. Like stuff like that, you know, like common sense for some went out the door because of the impact of fear, you know, on ability to think straight, while others were just kind of like, okay, like, you know, you want to trust, and then after a while you start to, like, say, I don't know, like, I don't know if it's quite. So it's just, it's so tough, but I think in the end it's just you have to follow your mind, your first mind.
Excellent. I would just like to say that right now, and I emphasize this all the time, 49.5% of adolescents have experienced at least one short-term or long-term mental health crisis, and that is without a diagnosis. That is just going through life, you know, daily life. And with that in mind, when there's an additional layer of something such as a diagnosis, of course, anxiety or depression could be heightened. So with that being said, I hope and pray that as people move forward, whether you have an inkling that something's happening, or whether you get a diagnosis, or whether you're still in the recovery stage, find your best fit support, whether it be a clinician, a peer support, a life coach, whatever it may be, family, friends, find your support. I have a friend from college that, like, she's like, we both know that if we call each other, you got to drop what's going on. And I can call her 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And her name's Debbie Darlene Thompson. She's my life, my love. And then the other one is my best friend, Sabel. And, you know, Sabel's a flight attendant, so she could be in another country. And one time I said, Sabel, I need you. Within 24 hours, she was here. She was in Singapore. 48 hours, she was here. She was in Singapore. So I know that I have that support system as things move forward. And that's one of the things that I was going to say is that, you know, having that support system can be the difference in adding on an additional layer or reducing an additional layer of stress.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the friendship that you guys have and the support that you have and the network that is continuously growing. I love the message that you're sharing of awareness and support. We need you. We need you. I thank you. I will tell you that when I first found out, I started checking my eyelids.
Yes.
No eyeliner, no nothing.
It's real.
I mean, and we should check. We should check.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I thank you so much for that, Kim. I thank you for the many, many laughs and the great conversation that we've had prior to this. And I hope and pray that we stay in touch because you are just a dynamo as we uncover more.
Right back
journey.
To all. Strong women on the show, Carolyn, Susan, and
thank
Dr.
you, everybody.
Valentina, thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Yes,
love
I'm
you
sorry.
Too, Carolyn.
Thank,
thank
you,
everyone. Susan. Bye-bye. Good night.
Everyone. Have a great week. And, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Take care.